saving money when you start your next project today at Menards. Check out our great selection of garage and utility lighting options. In stock, ready to take home today. We carry everything to help you illuminate whatever project you're working on. Shop garage and utility lighting products in store at your nearest Menards. You can also view all of our entire selection of lighting options today on Menards.com. Save big money at
Menards. Coming right up on episode 259 of Wheel Bearings, we've got lots of Hyundais with the Elantra N, the Santa Cruz, and the 2023 Palisade. We've also got the Mazda CX-30, a road trip in the Nissan Rogue. Electrify America goes flat pack. Ralph Nader calls out Tesla. EVs are getting more expensive. And Cadillac's got some interesting new names. All that and more coming up next. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. This is Wheel Bearings episode 259. I'm Sam Abul Samaj from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakelin with the Fast Women podcast.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from The Drive.
And Mr. Baldwin, since you haven't had anything to drive for the last couple of weeks.
It's still an empty block on the show notes. Does he have something to drive?
No, he's got something in there. Tell us what you've been driving, Robbie.
So I didn't have it at home because now I have to travel for like the next couple weeks. But I drove the Hyundai Santa Fe. I'm sorry, not the Santa Fe, the Santa Cruz.
The trucky thing.
The little trucky thing, which I have not driven yet.
The trucklet. Oh, I like that.
It just hasn't come up. So I got to drive it while I was in North Carolina. I drove the all-wheel drive four-cylinder turbo edition. So I drove the expensive one, and it has a little. You know what? I don't know how to say that the name of the thing on the back that covers the bed. Tonneau?
Yeah.
I never say it the same way twice. I go Tono, then Tano, then Tano, then Tonoa. I make it up as I go. I don't know either.
I've never heard it said out loud before.
Yeah, it's a Tano cover.
Tano?
It's a Tano. It's one of those words like when you're a little kid and you read a lot of books and there's all these words you know, but you don't know how they sound.
You don't know how to pronounce them.
Yeah, if you're talking to the head of product PR at Stellantis, it's Deno, Rick Deno. But if you're talking about the cover on the back of a pickup truck, it's a Tano.
Now I'm going to remember that will actually work if I think Tano like Deno. Well, thanks, Rick. Appreciate that.
So, yeah, so I drove, had the little Tano on the back, and it was, we were in North Carolina. We were driving up this little mountain road, and it did really well for a truck. It's all-wheel drive, of course, though, and it's also really an SUV.
And it's only sort of a truck. It's really a Hyundai Tucson.
It's a Hyundai Tucson.
With a bed.
It's a trucklet. It's like the Maverick. The Maverick's like, you know, the edge, but in both instances, throwing truck bodies on top of SUV platforms is a pretty sweet gig, to be honest. It was a fun little car. I really enjoyed it far more than I anticipated. The only downside to this vehicle is that it's more expensive than the Maverick. The only downside is that the Maverick exists. It doesn't exist in a vacuum. That's really about it.
But I think the Maverick is not as nice a ride as.
The Maverick's not as nice.
The Maverick is absolutely much more basic.
Yes, the Maverick is basic. Where the Santa Cruz is like, ooh, it's a nice little truck inside here.
Yeah, if you're looking for, it's the same. We've talked about it again and again and again. You get a Hyundai, you're getting more than what you pay for compared to pretty much anywhere else. The interior is the same. You're getting more than what you pay for. It is if you look at the Maverick, you're like, it's basic. It's not as nice as I want. Just you can get the Santa Cruz and then be like, oh, this is nice. Yeah, doesn't have all the utilities, doesn't have 3D printing, doesn't have all the little slats in the back, or slots in the back for random pieces of wood, which I still have in my backyard. All the random pieces of wood for the Maverick video shoot.
So now you have to go buy a Maverick so you can use those.
I actually thought that like about 2 weeks ago. I was in my backyard and I was moving some wood around, and I saw all there was like four or five pieces that I had cut specifically for that vehicle, and I was like, I should just go buy a Maverick.
You've got these. You got $4 worth of wood. You might as well go buy a whole truck to match it.
No, wood's expensive. That's a good $200 worth of wood.
Oh, sorry, Mike. Still, that makes much more sense to buy a truck to match it now. Totally makes sense.
$200 worth of wood, I might as well run out and buy a $20,000 vehicle that A, I'm not going to get for like 8 months, and B, is going to cost me $30,000 because the world is insane right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Back to the Santa Cruz. No, it was. You know, I only had it for about an hour. I didn't get to haul things with it, but I did get to move, open and close the trunk and use the Tonneau. Okay, I'm going to remember that.
Tonneau.
I'm going to forget it in about 30 seconds. Tonneau. I really like the Hyundai Santa Cruz. It's a great little truck. If you're looking for a small truck and you want something a little bit more fancy than the Maverick, if you demand satisfaction when it comes to an interior. I'm not saying the Maverick interior is bad. It's actually really good for the price you're paying. But the Santa Cruz is just nicer. It's just nicer in and out.
It's more stylish. You know,
it's more stylish.
It's a little more premium looking interior.
It's like a tiny Ridgeline.
Yeah.
It's a tiny Honda Ridgeline. Mm-hmm.
That's what I was thinking. It is like you took a Ridgeline, just squish it down and put a Hyundai badge on it.
Yeah, if you like, it even has a little trunk inside the bed. You like, whoop, whoop, put little things in there. It's not as deep as the Ridgeline, but it's you're looking for it. You're looking at the Ridgeline. You're like, it was just a little too big. Hyundai's like, hey, hold on. We got something for you.
We got you covered.
Hey, we can fix that.
We got
that.
You covered. Because it was the all wheel drive and it was the turbo version. It the price was $40,000, which is.
Ouch.
Yeah. I don't think you need the turbo, really, to be quite honest. All-wheel drive, I mean, that's up to you as a human, whether or not you think you need all-wheel drive. But other than that, no, I think you could be fine with it.
I mean, if all you're doing is hauling around mulch, you can probably get by without the four-wheel drive.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, you live somewhere, maybe it snows, and you want that little extra peace of mind.
I'm still a little surprised, you know, given that this thing is based on the Tucson platform, and you know, from the doors forward, you know, it's basically a Tucson. I mean, there's very subtle differences from the Tucson that they didn't think about putting the plug-in or the hybrid powertrain in here from launch, as Ford did with the Maverick. And I talked to the head of product planning for SUVs at the program in North Carolina this week about that, and he said, there was some challenges with the packaging for the battery in the Santa Cruz, and they're still working on that. They realized that they'd like to have a hybrid version in there, but they haven't worked all that out yet. So hopefully before the end of the product cycle for this one, they'll have a hybrid version to go up against the Maverick hybrid.
Ooh, so let's assume they had a hybrid version and you could go with a hybrid Santa Cruz or a Maverick, then what would you do?
I would still get the Maverick it's less expensive. I don't need fancy when it comes to a truck. I'm very like every in my brain still for me personally, the vehicles that are like a truck should be a truck. A truck should be something that I'm hauling like horses with and throwing hay in the back of. Like that's like my whole history with trucks is that it was always like a work machine. Like if it gets scratched, no one cares because it's a truck.
So you don't want any like fancy pants, King Ranch, platinum.
No, I don't want any of that.
None of the fancy trims. You're like, I want the work truck, whatever the word is, XL or whatever it is.
Yeah. To me, a truck is a work truck. An SUV should be something that I could go off road with. It's essentially just a slightly nicer Wrangler, you know.
A slightly nicer Wrangler. Otherwise, trucks and Wranglers are exactly the same.
No, if I'm looking at an SUV, I want an SUV to be a slightly nicer Wrangler. I want it to be nicer than a Wrangler inside with doors to close and windows that don't make weird noises. But I also want to be able to go off-roading. And so, like, the whole, you know, hatchbacks should be hatchbacks. And, yeah, wagons should be wagons. But I think wagons is the one thing where you should take your family somewhere really fast. That's what.
So what you're saying is you don't actually want vehicles to cross over between segments.
I don't.
They should be what they are.
Be
you don't want any intermingling.
No intermingling.
I don't want coupes that have four doors. Or coupes. I want a coupe with. I want a two door coupe. I want a manual transmission. In a sports car, I want to, yeah. So then again, I have a crossover EV. So what are you gonna do
at Thanksgiving? Do you also make sure like that your turkey doesn't touch your mashed potatoes?
No. When I eat food, I cram it all together.
Okay, I wasn't sure how far this.
Once you chew, it's all turning into one big mass anyway. So
yeah, I want everything all smashed together. But then again, this is just me. And so when I look at cars, I look at how the rest of the world would want them. But for me personally, it would be the Maverick, just because I want a very simple, just a truck. Boom. Done.
That's it.
Like the Miata. You just want a roadster, and that's it. It's a roadster. You're not trying to like, hey, let's kind of gussy it up with some. No, it's a roadster. You get in, you drive it. It's fun.
Okay.
I like that. Right. And this is why we have choices. So that you can pick the one that works for you. For somebody that wants a little more visual style, they can go for the Santa Cruz.
I really like it too.
But I want a truck that's a truck.
I want a truck I want that a truck. Feels like a nice
I want to feel
inside.
I want to feel okay putting the dogs in the back of the Maverick. I feel like if I can put them in the back of the Santa Cruz, but I'm going to feel a little bit like, I'm going to put a cover down. In the Santa Cruz, in the Maverick, they're just getting in. It's like at my house, we have the Kona EV.
Yeah.
We have a cover inside the car for the dogs. But in the Jaguar, they just ride on the leather seats. We don't care. On the Jaguar sedan, the dogs just sit right there, right on the leather seats. Good for them. They deserve the nice feel of leather on their bums.
Leather on their little butts.
All right.
I love this as they refer. We're talking about like that. What's your priority? Well, my dog's butt is comfortable, so I'm going to buy the car.
My dog is comfortable, and as far as I'm concerned, the Jaguar to me is just a work vehicle. It is a working vehicle. It is used for just hauling things around, including the dogs.
Okay. Well, I was listening to the Accidental Tech podcast the other day, and one of the co-hosts, Marco Arment, was telling a story. He and his wife and son live on Fire Island in New York. And he has, in addition to his Tesla, he's got an old Toyota FJ Cruiser that he bought, which was in the hope that he was going to be able to get a permit to drive on the island, because you have to have a permit to drive on the island. And he noticed the FJ was starting to get a little rusty and other stuff, and he started looking up the resale values of them, and realized that he could actually sell the FJ Cruiser for more than he bought it. Right now, he could sell it trade it in for more than he bought it for last fall. And so he took his 10-year-old son to go car shopping to get a replacement for that. And he looked at the Wrangler plug-in hybrid, the 4xe, the Land Rover Defender, and... what was the other one? The Toyota 4Runner. And, you know, he had his son come along to give his ratings on the thing, you know, including, you know, rear seat comfort and rear visibility while driving. And also his third rating was how it smells. And they ended up, and, you know, they found that the Wrangler, while it had a great powertrain, you know, plug-in hybrid, and, you know, obviously great four-wheel drive capability, it was really cramped and everything, you know, even in the four-door Wrangler. The 4Runner just felt old, which it
well,
was.
Fair.
And so they ended up buying the Land Rover Defender instead.
That is a solid choice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That Defender is so nice.
Yeah.
It's nice that Marco can afford a Defender.
I know. Yeah. Also, there's a little pricing discrepancy between those things he was listing there.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I mean, the Wrangler they were looking at was 70 grand.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It can't get up there. It was like a Rubicon then, right?
Yeah. And actually, the Defender they bought was actually a 18-month-old used one. It was a 2020
model. Then pricing probably
Ooh.
All.
Yeah. Because on the new Defenders, the dealer was asking a $15,000 markup on the new Defenders.
Of course they were.
But he got the used one with, like, I don't know, 15,000 miles on it or something for a really good price. So,
anyway. Good. You know what? That's a perfect example of, like, it's a Jeep just nicer.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a Jeep just nicer.
It's a Jeep just nicer.
Well, you can't take the doors off.
You can't take the doors off.
Yeah, it's fine.
You can drop the windshield.
It's great and fun if you do that, but I think people do that once.
We take the doors off.
I see, like, a surprising number of people drive around here in Wranglers with the doors off.
Yeah.
I had an uncle who I don't think he ever had the doors on. It was a Renegade. It was back when the Wrangler Renegade.
Yeah.
It's like old time.
It was a trim level on the CJ at one point.
Okay. Yeah.
It was a trim level, and I don't think he ever had I think he might have had a roof, but I never saw it, and I never, ever maybe saw the doors.
Maybe he got a really good deal. This doesn't come with doors or roof. Not a problem. Don't need them anyway.
I've actually finally seen a couple of Broncos driving around with the doors off in the last couple of weeks, so.
Good for those
You know what? The few Broncos I've seen, because obviously far less of those on the road, I have not seen a single one that wasn't closed up tight as a drum. Every single one. There's nothing removed from that. Everything all buttoned up. No outside elements were intruding into those vehicles.
Yeah, I haven't seen one with the doors off yet.
Yeah. Interesting.
They should call my uncle. He'll be like, what are you doing? What's the point of having a vehicle you can take the doors off? You're leaving the doors off. I remember as a little kid, like 5-6 years old, just be like, that's the road. I can see the road.
Right there.
Were you at least buckled in?
Yeah, it could have been questionable back in the day. It could have been questionable.
Yeah, I think that might have been the only vehicle I buckled in like the early 80s.
Like, I always buckled in.
Our parents never,
My mom was a nurse, so she was like, you will be properly secured in a vehicle at all times, because she'd seen some stuff over the years, and she's like, you will wear your seatbelt.
Yeah, not us. We were just sort of like fancy free and flopping all over the place.
And you survived. And yet here you are, despite the lack of seatbelt usage, the responsible child that you were.
I got through my childhood without ever, seeing a bicycle helmet. So.
Yeah, that's true.
We did some crazy stuff on our bikes.
That's right. No helmets. Yeah, I was watching Stranger Things, and there was a moment where they had the kids riding, and they had like pads on their knees and pads on their
elbows. The skateboard thing.
You know what I'm talking about.
That was totally inauthentic 80s.
The most inauthentic scene in the entire series is that moment. I was watching. I was like, no, that's not right. Because I remember even in the late 80s, if anyone showed up with pads or a helmet, skateboarding, oh my God. Skateboarding was so incredibly, it was this outsider thing, but also very elitist. Like once you became a skateboarder, like, you didn't wear pads. You had to listen to punk music. there were rules to being a skateboarder.
I'm so glad that scene bothered you, because as soon as it came on the screen, I can't tell you what else was happening, because all my brain did was like, whoop, that's not the 80s. That is not the 80s.
Especially the mid 80s? I remember late 80s. Some kid showed up. We were all skateboarding. Some kid showed up with pads. And we were like, what are you doing? And he's like, my mom won't let me skateboard. We're like, is your mom even here? And he took the pads off. We peer pressure.
So you were a bad influence.
I didn't really talk much. So all the other kids made fun of him. But I didn't stop him. But we peer pressured this kid into riding unsafe, into putting his life in danger. And I think he hurt himself that day.
Nicely done, Robbie.
Came back with all scraped up knees
and elbows.
He
has a huge scar on the side of his face. Well, this kid, Robbie, when I was little, bullied me into not wearing my helmet.
Yeah. I had broken my arm once, and I still skateboarded with my arm. Broken arm. All I had was the brace that they made me wear. And I remember my mom being like, can you not do that? And I'm like, why? What do you mean? All the over stuff. Like an idiot.
Yeah. Sorry. All right. Got totally off track, but I'm like, wait a minute.
What did you drive, Nicole?
Okay. So I had the 2022 Mazda CX-30, and I'm going to try and look at this Maroni without crinkling. It is the single crinkliest. It's like they put it in saran wrap. I don't know what's happening here. So I have this vehicle for the week. It is the 2.5 turbo, which means it has a 2.5 liter turbocharged four cylinder, 227 horsepower, 310 pound feet of torque, 6-speed auto. It is $36,345. Wow. Okay, give me guesses on destination, because I just looked.
$1,200.
$1,295.
Oh, my God. So you guys are really close. $1,225.
Oh.
Ooh, okay. I won. Yeah. I think that's close enough. Going over.
Yeah, Price is Right.
Showcase rules. Showdown.
Wow, but $12.25, that's a lot. So, which wasn't where I was going, but I just looked, when I looked at the price, I'm like, good gravy. So I had this, it's super fun. I mean, Mazdas are pretty much always fun to drive. I don't think you generally get behind the wheel and go, wow, this is boring. Like, that just doesn't happen. And this one was no exception. It's a really fun little car to drive. It looks sleek. It looks sexy. Like, it has a nice look to it. It has that, like, Mazda isn't technically a luxury brand, but they have that, like, aspirational luxury vibe where they look a little upscale, they look a little fancy, look a little different. So it's a sweet little car sitting in the driveway, and I had a good time driving it. Took it around town a good bit, took it downtown into Boston on my usual trip. There's this tunnel they're doing construction in, and at certain times the tunnel is now closed. And every time I go through, the experience of driving through this tunnel is entirely different. One time the walls are like ragged cement that looks like something is going to cave in on you. The last time I went through, I had this, and it was like the road wasn't a road. I'm like, did you pull up everything and then just sprinkle it back on the pavement? It was the roughest ride. I was like, what has happened here? It was awful. Just a sprinkling of asphalt. Everyone's slowing down. Like, what the ever-loving heck? And I gotta say, it handled it really well, because we kind of all went into that tunnel at the normal speed and then got inside and did this like, whoa, baby, what's going on? So it handled really well in some truly terrible road surfaces in Boston right now. So I enjoyed driving it and thought that's pretty good. Like, it's definitely the kind of vehicle, if you're going to go on a long trip, whether that's road trip situation or maybe you have a long commute and you just want to be really comfy, but you want to have something that's fun to drive, I feel like the CX-30 checks that box. I like it. I still don't like that there's not a touchscreen. I can't get by it. I know, Sam, touchscreens aren't safe, Nicole. You should all be controlled some other way.
I wasn't saying anything.
Your eyes are saying it. So, yeah, no touchscreen, which I never like. But otherwise, you know, and it has the nice interior. It has all the things that make it feel, again, like that sort of aspirational luxury thing. There's leather trim seats and a power driver's seat, and you have the, you know, their heated front seats, which it's 90 degrees, not using that today. And, you know, you've got the sunroof. It's a nice car, and it has that sort of luxury vibe. And again, you know, $36,000, it's not super cheap, but you're getting a little bit of a luxurious experience without truly having to go into that price point, which I think is kind of nice. And if you need, it's not an especially spacious, you know, crossover SUV. I don't know how they qualify this one, but it's big enough.
Crossover.
So, you know, The thing that Robbie doesn't like. It's not an especially spacious thing.
Really tall hatchback.
Yeah.
So, tall hatchback. So, if you have real serious cargo needs, probably not for you, but the person who wants the, because it has standard all-wheel drive now across the lineup. So, if you want all-wheel drive, you want something that's a little more upscale, you want something that's fun to drive, and you know, need that little SUV vibe, but you don't really need, you're not doing the mulch thing, it's a great choice. So, I like it.
Yeah, and I mean, I love Mazdas, you know, because, you know, they have tried to make their vehicles more premium, mm-hmm. and they really feel premium, but the prices haven't gone up dramatically. They're still priced pretty competitively with cars that feel, you know, when you get in the Mazda, you've got soft touch surfaces. It feels mm-hmm. like a much more expensive vehicle than it is.
It does. I mean, because for 36, when I think about how this looked, just the sleekness and sexiness of it on the outside, plus the interior, the comfort level, it's very, very comfortable. The trims, the accent stitching, like when you take it all together as a package and you really evaluate and just look at it, it looks like it should cost more than it does. It doesn't look like it's a vehicle that cost under $40,000. It really doesn't. You'd think it would be somewhere in the 40s. So I think they do a really good job of delivering that without having to make you break the bank. Like, you want sort of want, I guess, luxury light, maybe. If you want that, Mazda can deliver that. And especially in the top trims and some of their, like, bigger SUVs and stuff, they're beautiful. They're really, really stunning.
I just wish you could get the turbo engine with a manual transmission.
Well,
don't even get me started on that.
That would be, you know, that could be a modern take on the Mazda Speed 3.
It could, but it's not. So no, just you deep know they cleansing said, breath, Roberto. You can't have it. No.
I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to be quiet. Not
a modern Mazda Speed 3 without the torque steer.
Yeah, it would. That would be amazing, Mazda. So that was my review vehicle. But I have one other vehicle to talk about. Can I talk about another one?
Absolutely. Talk about all you want.
So I also drove the Nissan Rogue. And the reason I drove the Nissan Rogue was they wanted me to do a little road trip in this. So I live in southern New Hampshire, and they were doing a little event where they had you road tripping to Saranac Lake, which is like in the Lake Placid area in New York. And it was sort of like a lifestyle-y thing. So you could bring someone with you. And I brought my daughter, who's going to college in 2 days. I'm not crying. Oh, I'm fine.
I'll be fine.
So we did this little road trip, and it was super fun because you don't often just get – it's often they sort of hand you a car and say, meet us here. Like, see you at dinner. like take the car and go. So we drove up, and it was – the thing that's different about it this year, it has a new engine. It's a 1.5-liter turbo three-cylinder, 201 horsepower, 225 pound-feet of torque. It's their variable compression turbo. It says VC turbo if you look at their little lingo. It's a really fun little car. And the thing is, we were taking it this S. Now, would you call this an SUV or crossover? SUV?
The Rogue?
Yeah.
I'd say an SUV.
SUV, okay.
Small SUV.
So we were taking this SUV from southern New Hampshire through the mountains in Vermont into upstate New York. So it's pretty, like, there was some steep terrain in there. Like, you're doing some winding mountain roads. And you could hear that, the CVT a little bit. Like, there's moments where it kind of drones, but it only was really when I was, like, really on a steep incline. Like, you only really noticed it when you were doing things that you typically don't do because the roads get really twisty and steep. But surprisingly fun to drive. Because there's a lot of swinging back and forth on those roads, like twisty turnies. And we found a mountain. We took a right instead of a left, and there was a mountain. We also got lost for 45 minutes, because I'm going to tell you, when you're selecting an item, like, you know where you're going and you want to restart your nav, you know how it, like, resorts on your phone, like when you're using CarPlay? And, like, well, Lake Flower was just Lake Flower for the name of the road. But then a Lake Fletcher had popped up when we stopped at a bookstore. And I glanced, and it must have shifted slightly. So I took us to Lake Fletcher, which is in the middle of nowhere in Vermont.
Oh, fancy.
Yeah, 45 minutes the wrong way. I saw some great barns, a lot of cows. And it was when I was on this really, really, like, ratty dirt road. I'm like, this can't possibly be where Nissan wants me to be. Let me double check this.
But you got to do some dirt road driving.
We did. We did some actual little, and I'm like, oh, and I get there and they're like, we're going to gas up your car and tidy. I'm like, yeah, sorry. I found a dirt road by accident. So it was like, it was white when we left, not so much when we got there. So we had a really nice drive, and it was funny. It proved such a nice, comfortable road trip vehicle. Like, they have the zero gravity seats too. Which I know, again, sounds
whatever
like,
the hell that actually
it
means.
It sounds like marketing things, but it's like I looked it up and it's, you know, it's supposed to hold your body into the position to reduce the number of pressure points and mimic sort of the weightlessness, like the right posture for your spine and everything, so you don't get as tired. My 4-ish hour drive was more like 5.5 because I went the wrong way. And I didn't have any of that road weariness, honestly, that you get after you've been behind the wheel for a while. So it was pretty comfy. So I gave it high marks for its seats and for the new engine. Low marks to me for not knowing how to put an address into navigation and taking myself into the middle of nowhere in Vermont. So those were my two vehicles that I drove.
Yeah, I had a chance to drive to spend a couple of hours with the updated Rogue earlier in the spring. Mm-hmm. When they were first announced the new engine, the 1.5-liter three-cylinder turbo, and yeah, I mean the rest of it is unchanged from last year. But that engine is a huge improvement over the old 2.5-liter four-cylinder.
And the thing is, it's funny because it's like, I can't remember the exact horsepower difference, and it does jump up on horsepower.
It's only by a few.
Right. Yeah. So it's not like this gigantic leap in horsepower, but the engine itself is so much better, the turbo. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot more torque.
Yeah.
There's only a little more horsepower, but there's a lot more torque and low-end torque.
It makes a big difference.
Stronger.
Yeah, it feels much stronger. Like I said, I was accelerating on some pretty, you know, when you get into the mountains anywhere, it's not like you're on steep terrain and you need something to get up because it's off-road. It's just steep and cars struggle with it a lot of the time. And this didn't really struggle. It was, it held its own, which was pretty impressive.
Cool. Well, we'll be talking more about dirt roads in a few minutes. I had the Hyundai Elantra N. Which is, you know, the latest of the N series cars from the Korean brand. It's the same powertrain that was in the Veloster N, because the Veloster N has now been discontinued, sadly. But essentially, what you're getting with the Elantra N is a Veloster N with a slightly more, in some ways, slightly more practical package. You got the latest generation of Elantra styling, which, you know, is kind of Hyundai's, you know, current design language with the sort of faceted, you know, creases, sharp creases in the bodywork. It's a sharp looking car, especially with all the end stuff on there, the front air dam, the front splitter, with the red accents. The one I had was in the performance blue, which is the signature color for the N brand for Hyundai. This is a 2.5 liter or 2 liter turbo four cylinder, 276 horsepower, I think 255 foot pounds of torque. Fantastic engine. I think, you know, it's basically the same engine that was in that Santa Cruz that you drove, Robbie, but with tuned for a little more performance. And you can get the Elantra N with a 6-speed manual, just as you used to be able to in the Veloster. I had the one with the 8-speed dual clutch transmission, which when I talked previously about the Veloster N with that same setup, when you put it, you know, on the steering wheel, there's a button to engage N mode, you know, which is their performance mode. And when you put it in N mode, it just transforms this thing. I mean, it's fun to drive all the time, you know, whatever mode you're in. But really, when you put it in N mode, it transforms, especially the way the transmission behaves. Because when you're, you know, when you're accelerating hard, you know, it keeps it in gear, you know, revs it up close to red line. When you're braking hard into a corner, you'll feel it and hear it downshifting, doing exactly the kinds of things you would do if you were driving a manual transmission, you know, quickly. You know, so doing the rev matching and everything as it's downshifting, it sounds great. Obviously, you're not quite as engaged because you're not, you know, manipulating the clutch and the shift lever and everything, but it does the thing, you know, so it controls the transmission in the way that you would want to control it if you were doing it manually. So you're always in the right gear so that you have the revs up, you've got the boost up, so that as you're coming past the apex of the corner, you can accelerate out. So it's great in that respect. As an N model, it has the lightened sport bucket seats, so you've got extra extra side bolstering on this thing. It's a simplified seat. It doesn't have a whole lot of adjustments. In fact, there's very few adjustments. Moving the seat back and forth is completely manual. You got to reach down in front of you, grab the bar, slide it forward and back.
You got to work for it.
The way God intended.
Exactly. And you can recline the seat, and that's about it. I think there's a height adjustment on the driver's side, and that's all you get. The front passenger doesn't even get a height adjustment. But you know, aside from that, it's also got an electronic limited slip differential, and this is a front wheel drive car, but it's got a limited slip differential in the front. So again, that helps with your cornering, putting the power where it needs to be. Again, also with the N mode, you get a little more, there's a variable exhaust, variable valve system in the exhaust so that it sounds considerably louder in N mode. It sounds fun to drive, and it is a lot of fun to drive. And despite, you know, being lowered and having, you know, low profile tires and big wheels and everything, it's actually also surprisingly comfortable to drive even, you know, on roads that are less than ideal. As we have them here in Michigan. So you can have a great time with this thing, still use it, you know, very comfortably as a daily driver. The one thing that I was sad not to see in this car that was in the previous two Veloster Ns that I've driven, the manual and the DCT version, is the same performance blue seatbelts. In the Velosters, they always had the seatbelts that in that signature blue color they have for the N brand. And this one just had plain old black seat belts. It did have the contrast stitching in that blue color, but I kind of miss the seat belts. It's kind of just a fun little, nice little touch.
If you have a performance, like, sub-brand or trim level, you should have different colored seat belts beyond black.
Seems reasonable to me. I mean, when you get a Polestar engineered Volvo, they're bright yellow seat belts, and I think on AMGs they're red, if I recall. I think they, I think they're red. It's been a while since I drove one. Last one, I think, had red ones. Anyway, great, great car. As equipped with the DCT, the Elantra N came to $35,145, including $1,095 freight charge. Most stuff is standard equipment on here. I think the only options on here were the $400 for the blue paint and $1,500 for the DCT. Everything else is standard on here. One thing I noticed on this one, and actually going back, I've noticed on the last couple of Hyundais and Kias I've driven, as well as on the car we'll talk about next, Sounds of Nature is gone. There's no more Sounds of Nature.
Is it really?
Wait, what?
Yeah, they stopped putting it in there.
Oh, it was you're kidding.
The other? Okay, we'll talk about it.
I mean, I can understand it on the Elantra N because you want to hear that engine, you know, because it sounds so good. But on some of the other ones, like when I was driving the Tucson plug-in hybrid a few weeks ago, it didn't have Sounds of Nature, which I think would have been really good when you're driving around in EV mode.
Aw, this makes me sad.
How do I know what it's like to sit on a sidewalk cafe?
Yeah, well, I guess you'll just have to drive the car to a sidewalk cafe and get out and sit there for a while.
Ugh.
I may have solved the mystery, though. Sam. Did you look under media?
I didn't.
That's where it's at now.
Oh, so they just moved it.
They just moved it.
Because it used to be at the top level of the menu as you were swiping
like a whole thing, like a top level. Like that was
Sounds of Nature.
One of the more important things of the vehicle was sound. Yeah, now it's in media. Because we,
okay. I'm glad they didn't get rid of that.
Okay, yeah, just a little worried there for a minute.
When we talk about the next vehicle, I'll
okay.
That's one of the things about, did you know you could do this? I'm all, and we're just cranking it, listening.
All right. Well,
you know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
With that, why don't we move ahead to the next vehicle, something that all three of us drove this past week.
Yes, which doesn't often happen.
Two of you were there at the same time, in fact.
We were.
Yeah, you really blew it, Sam. Could you coordinate
better? I mean, really.
You could have done a podcast in the car while riding around
at the same time, yeah.
At the same time.
Absolutely.
In one place.
Doing it while we're driving around on a dirt road for an hour and a half.
A rugged off-road trail that we were on. Not dirt road, rugged off-road trail.
So the vehicle we are referring to is the refreshed 2023 Hyundai Palisade, which all three of us went to Asheville, North Carolina this past week to drive.
Yes.
What did you think?
It's still a great vehicle. It's it's a great vehicle made better with like just some smart updates to tech and a few other things. And then it'll also not let you leave your child or your animals in the car anymore without hassling you and people around the vehicle.
And so I also like the updates on the outside. They changed the grill and stuff in the front of it.
Grill.
And I think it looks far, far better outside than it did before, which was not as great.
And the XRT, I mean, yeah, it was not didn't look nearly as nice as the Telluride. But the XRT, which is all black, like most of the time with the midnight black, whatever people want to call them, you're just like, eh. But this one looks really, really good.
Yeah.
It's like the best looking one.
Especially with the white body and then everything else in black.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's quite sharp.
It's fantastic. And it still has the Sounds of Nature because we used it while we were driving through this crazy off-road adventure. And when I say crazy, I mean like just a really long driveway.
That's the perfect description, a really long driveway.
So
yeah, we listened to the waves and to a cafe, all the regular things that you definitely need to listen to while you're driving around.
We had, what, about 35 minutes or so from the hotel to the Biltmore Estate.
Yeah, which is beautiful.
Which is beautiful, and it's also the home of a Jaguar Land Rover off-road driving facility, which is what we used. Except, you know, as good as the Palisade is, and it's a wonderful vehicle as a three-row family SUV, it's not really an off-road vehicle.
It's not, and I like that the idea that they wanted to take us, like, hey, it can go off-road, and But I almost think at heart, does it more harm than good, as they're kind of proving by our conversation. But like, no one's really taking this off road. And when you tell a bunch of journalists that you're going to take us off road, it needs to be more than a really long dirt driveway. We're all kind of like, guys.
Hey, there were a couple of mud puddles.
But like, really seriously, how many vehicles could you not have taken on this course? You can probably name them on one hand, like a Miata.
Yeah.
Like
BRZ.
I think I could have taken my BRZ on.
See, yeah.
And there was like one little downward turn and then pull back up that I think I would have had a little trouble with the BRZ, but I think I could have made it through.
See, that was the problem. When they take you on something that it's just so easy to drive, the spotter didn't help because he's like, okay, guys, I'm hopping out of the car. I'm going to help you up here because we have a bump. And I'm like, where did we drive? Oh, we did it. Like you,
like you passed him and I was still looking for it. I was
I passed him on one spot because there was a hill. There was a hill that we had to be careful of. And I was just going up and he gave me frantic slow down as if I was going 85. And I'm like, was that the hill he was all worried about? Next thing in the walkway, they're like, click, click, everybody, we need to slow down here because we need to make sure we're paying attention. I'm like, dude, I could do this in a Camry. I think I'm good. I'm not like hooning up the hill here. And it just, it was fine on the very long dirt driveway.
And we spent, about an hour and 20 minutes or so on that trail?
It was a while.
Yeah.
I would have rather
it was
just
45 minutes each, I think. Yeah. So it was like an hour and a half.
I would have rather just driven it, honestly, just give me some more road time in it. Like, I didn't need to do that. Just let me drive it on some roads and twisty, turny bits and highway, like, because that's how most people are going to use it. I mean, it did.
If you're going to the KOA in the Palisade or to like a music festival in the Palisade,
you will have no problem at all.
You'll be able to handle that situation perfectly. In the dirt. And it was still comfortable inside.
Yes, it is.
Still, yeah, everything. You know, it was just okay. We also, 3 miles an hour.
Yeah. He was, and the Land Rover guy, he knew his stuff clearly, but he was very dramatic. It's like, there is a bump. There is a hill. Be careful. And we're just looking like,
For the hump and a hill.
You know what it is? It's like when you're using Waze and it's like, is there an accident? And you're looking and ready to push, like, there is or isn't. And you're like, was it here? I guess I hit no because I don't see anything. Like, you just have no idea.
Yeah,
that's kind of how that was.
Did you guys see the pig?
We did.
We saw a puppy. We saw him too.
He's a tiny dog.
We kept having to stop. Like, everybody going back and had to stop because he kept walking out in front of the Palisades.
Oh.
So people, whoever was in the passenger seat would jump out and kind of guide him back over towards the house so that truck could go by, and then they'd get in, and then he'd run back out in front of the next one.
That's funny.
But he was very cute. There's a couple of people saw a bear, although that was on the afternoon drive after lunch going up to Mount Mitchell. They saw a black bear.
Ooh!
I didn't see the bear. People showed pictures of them seeing the bear.
Yeah. Jill Simonillo was driving with Gary Witzenberg. They got a picture of the bear, and somebody else saw the bear as well. I can't remember who now. But that was after we got away from the off-road part. That was when we were on a regular paved road. Very nice road, by the way, as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, my partner and I drove the Hyundai Ioniq 5 up the mountain, and that was an excellent vehicle for that drive.
Our drive up the mountain, it was our day. It was cloudy on the mountain. Did you even go all the way to the top of the mountain, Roberto?
We did. It was overcast up there, and we actually had some rain on the way down. There was rain coming through and some thunderstorms.
Ours was super misty. Like, you couldn't see anything 2 feet in.
Yeah, you couldn't see anything. We took the venue up, and so we got most of the way, and then we just turned around. We're like, we've already driven the venue. Wasn't that, And then we went back, and then I got the Palisade, and I drove that over. I took that out for an hour, and I hit crazy rain.
it was just, crazy
first
rain.
It was like, it was raining a lot, and it was raining like just huge, giant drops. And I'm like, okay, well, it's a lot of rain, whatever. It's not something I'm used to because California. But then at one point, all of a sudden, it just fell like for a good minute. The rain dropped so quickly and so hard that you just couldn't see. It was just like white. It was like blizzard whiteout conditions of rain. For like a minute, and I had their driver's assistance feature on, and I couldn't say anything, but the car knew to slow down. It realized the vehicle in front of us was slow. All I saw were little, like, just faint red lights pop on when someone put their brakes on. And so, yeah, so their camera system and radar system works.
And the, technology. The radar.
Yeah, probably not the camera. The radar system. Yeah. the camera is completely worthless at this. Yeah, the camera system is completely worthless at that point. So, no, it was, yeah, so yeah, so I had a, because that 20 minutes, which, or 40 minutes to the place, which meant I got it for 20 minutes, and then 45 minutes of off-roading, 65 minutes, and, you know, three quarters of it is driving under 5 miles an hour wasn't enough for my article. So I went back and said, hey, I need to drive this car some more. And they said, oh, here you go.
All right. Let's see. What else came up this week? Oh, so speaking of EVs for a moment, Electrify America announced a deal with IKEA this week. And they're going to be putting in a bunch of Electrify America fast chargers, which hopefully will work. We'll see. At IKEA locations in 18 states across the U.S. And they're putting in about 200 chargers for the public to use and a similar number for IKEA to use for their delivery vehicles because they're getting Ford e-transits. So they're going to, the first batch of those will be installed by the end of this year, and all of them will be installed by the end of next year. So now, you know, you can drive your EV to IKEA and, you know, maybe possibly be able to charge it up while you're getting lost inside that massive store.
I mean, I was thinking about it. You would have enough time to fully charge your vehicle because how long does it take to average get through an IKEA? I mean, you get there when they open after lunchtime with your, once you've had your Swedish meatballs, you finally mm-hmm. leave. So,
and your cinnamon rolls. Don't forget your cinnamon rolls.
And your cinnamon rolls. Can't forget those. So by the time you do all that, you can fully charge your vehicle out there.
Well, you're going to, I mean, that's the crazy thing is that even the slowest vehicles will charge in like 40 minutes. And it takes a good 3 or 4 days to get through an IKEA. And what's really nice is that after you've had a big argument with your significant other, to come back to a fully charged vehicle.
Right.
Because that's what IKEA does. It breaks down, you know,
relationships.
Yeah. It's like it breaks relationships.
After you've been meandering through those curvy aisles, you know, trying to figure out, you know, trying to find the thing you're looking for, you know, and you finally just plop yourself down in a sofa or on one of the beds and say, I give up. Yeah.
Like, forget it. I'm just going to sit here and eat my meatballs and cinnamon rolls, and I give up with everything. I'm done.
Yeah. I think it works best. What's nice is that you can go in and get food in the time it takes to charge. So that's really, I mean, I think going to shop at IKEA and then charging IKEA is you're going to end up with a huge bill for just sitting there. You're going to be that person who just leaves a car.
It's going to be fully charged, but your car sat there for an extra 8 hours.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the going in and or if you're the person, like sometimes I'll go to IKEA and know exactly what I want. I'll just head straight to, they have like a little shortcut. So you can just go straight to the warehouse and just grab the thing you need and get the hell out. Like that's me. Like I'm just in, I'm out, I'm on with my life. I'm on the internet. I'm like, I'm shopping here. I don't want to get lost. I don't want to, you know. They don't give you the little paper measuring tape anymore at IKEA, I've noticed.
Oh, really? I haven't been in one in a while.
I feel like ours still had them. Maybe?
Oh, maybe they just ran out.
Huh. Probably a supply chain problem.
Yeah. Everything's...
They're putting in 225 chargers at 25 IKEA stores across the U.S. So that means it's going to be about, you know, almost, you know, somewhere between 8 and 10 per store, which is pretty good. So chances are if you get there, there's a pretty decent chance there will be one available. Whether there will be a working EA charger available is an entirely different situation.
Different question altogether.
Yeah. Well, you know, they need to start putting them at Trader Joe's. That's another place I think would do well with EV.
But you could spend hours at Trader Joe's.
Nah, you're not there in Trader Joe's that long. you're not in Trader Joe's. You're in line for Trader Joe's.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
The checkout line, yeah.
Truth.
Checkout
line.
They're always like, you know, the whole store is slightly askew, and then the checkout line. See, now you're just...
All right. Well, let's stay with EVs. And this is something that Nicole found. I'll let you take the lead on this one.
Are we going to talk about the Cadillac situation?
We're going to talk about the situation with Cadillac, yes.
Okay, so Cadillac, and somebody had shared this with me, another colleague, like first thing this morning, and then I looked at him, my first thought was, is this a joke? Like, I actually didn't believe it. And this is from a report at Automotive News that Cadillac has trademarked the following names for future EV models. These all end in IQ. It's optic, symbolic, ascendic, lumistic, and vistic, I guess, is how you'd say all those, given their naming convention. But also, these are the ones that got me. The Escalade and Escalade ESV become the Escalade IQ and Escalade IQL. Okay, fine, whatever. We're going with this whole IQ thing. But if you're pronouncing that as ick on the end, ascendic, lumistic, vistic, then didn't you just create then the Escalade ick?
Yep.
Okay.
Escalade.
Apparently, no one at Escalade Market or Cadillac Marketing actually said these names out loud. They wrote them down, wrote them on a whiteboard, and said, "Yeah, okay, that looks good. Yeah. I like that." But nobody bothered to say it out loud.
And then your long wheel based is the Escalade ICL. I mean, what? What were they? Why? Because I know it's supposed to be IQ, but you don't pronounce the Q like a Q in any of these other fancy pants names as they're doing all this. And granted, these are just trademarks, so who knows which of these would happen, right? But you've already said it's Lyric. You've already said it's Celestic. So if you do the ick is how you pronounce it ending, it's going to be the Escalade ick.
And even if you say, I mean, some people have said, you know, Celestic is Celestique, you know, then it's Escalade eek. Which right? Isn't really any better.
Is that Escalade eek? Yeah, that's no better.
It's scary.
What? I don't think that, you know, no, Cadillac, don't do that. You've only trademarked this. You have time to change your mind. Don't do this.
I just so no one else will steal those awesome names from them.
I know, those awesome, right, because I'm sure if you don't
file the trademark, if you don't take care of your, you know, if you don't defend your IP, then anyone can do whatever they want with it.
That's true.
You gotta defend your IP.
I can't with this. The Escalade ick. I mean, the Escalade V series, the Escalade V, I called the Escalative, and I thought that was fun, and that's like sounds like something fancy, right? But the Escalade ick does not sound like something fancy. It sounds like
what about Escalative? Escalotic?
Escalotic? Escalotic is a little better, but again, they call it an Escalade. I'm using the name from that old SNL skit about the Escalade that gets stuck in the snow in Atlanta. That's why I call it the Escalade. But anyway, yeah, the Escalade ick, Cadillac. No. So basically, that's my thought on this naming. Do you guys like this idea?
The rest of the names I don't have an issue with. You know, okay. Obviously, the spelling is, you know, weird, so that they can actually actually trademark it, you know, and they're fine.
Fine. And, I mean,
when Steve Carlisle, the former president of Cadillac, a couple of years ago, told us that we're ditching the CT and the XT names branding, and we're going back to names. You know, it's like everybody was all excited. Yes, great, finally, it's about time. Yeah, and like I said, the rest of these I have no issue with. But yeah, the Escalade ick, Escalade IQ, either one is it's either unappealing or clumsy. If you insist on saying Escalade IQ, you know, that's not any better either.
That's not exactly, it doesn't roll off the tongue. Like, leave it alone. Yeah. It's an Escalade. Just, and the funny thing is, it's like, it's not like it's a brand, like people who don't know the first thing about Cadillac, you very likely know what an Escalade is anyway. Mm-hmm. You're not even really a car person. You probably know what an Escalade is because it's like the baller big SUV that movie stars and soccer players and you're like everybody that's big and bulk. You want to buy an Escalade to show that you've arrived. But I don't want an Escalade ick, just an Escalade.
They can just do what Kona did, the Hyundai did with the Kona, and just be like the Escalade EV or the Escalade Electric. Done.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah. I'd be fine with that. Escalade EV.
It stays
EV,
on
Escalade
brand.
Electric.
The brand doesn't get sullied with like too many names. It's just like this is a trim level,
yeah.
And then eventually it'll just be the Escalade because it'll be an EV. They'll all be EVs, but don't overthink it, people.
Yeah, I feel like they did too much. I'm like, stop marketing. Somebody rein those guys in. Yeah.
All right. Well, as more and more EVs come out, you know, we were kind of hoping that EVs would start to get cheaper, but unfortunately, at least for now, they're actually getting more expensive because the price of the materials that go into EV batteries has gone up through the roof in the past year. Back in June, GM announced that prices on the Hummer were going up by about $6,200. And I think prices on some of the other models, I think the, for the 24 model year, because they've already sold out the 23 model year Lyrics, but for 24, I think those prices are going to be going up. And now, this couple days ago, Ford announced that just as they were reopening the order books to start to let people start ordering 2023 model year F-150 Lightnings. Yeah, that $40,000 Lightning Pro, not anymore. It's now $47,000. So the prices are going up anywhere between $6,000 and $7,000 depending on the trim level. The extended range Platinum is now $96,874, and the Pro is the cheapest one at $46,974, all before the $1,700 delivery charge.
Yikes!
I think we were all looking at like price parity, like coming down the road in a few years before COVID, and then that just got thrown into the wood chipper, and then tossed all over the landscape.
Gone.
Yeah. I mean, we still got the cheaper Bolt. The Bolt got cheaper.
That's true.
The Chevy Bolt got cheaper. I think the Kona got a little bit cheaper, like by a scooch. What else? Yeah, that's
it. Look on your face. The
VW ID4 we talked about last week.
The ID4.
A cheaper, base model.
Less expensive ID4.
Yeah.
So there's a few things that are cheaper, but yeah, for the most part.
Stuff people really want has apparently gotten.
All the new stuff is going to get is getting more expensive because they're all new and fancy, and they're like, yeah, we can make it for this much. And then everything happened. They're like, oh, no. We told everyone we could make it for this much, and we can't. We got to stay in business.
Well, at least the standard range, that Lightning Pro, for that extra $7,000, you do get an extra 10 miles of range this year. It's gone up from 230 to 240 miles.
So, hey, there you go. $700 per mile. It's a pretty sweet gig.
Yeah, it's a bargain.
Over the lifespan of your vehicle, you're going to be like, yeah, I get my $700 mile here.
All right. Last item of news for the week. Ralph Nader's back in the news. He's been relatively quiet of late. The guy who basically killed the Corvair back in the 1960s with his book Unsafe at Any Speed, and has been a consistent advocate for automotive safety for more than 50 years, has now set his sights on Tesla. And he has issued a statement this past week calling on the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration to recall Tesla's full self-driving software and autopilot software, saying no one is above the laws of manslaughter. This comes, in the last week or so, somebody else whose name escapes me at the moment, but he's the CEO and founder of Green Hills Software, I think. Yeah, Green Hills Software, which is a company that makes operating systems for, safety-critical systems. So they do real-time operating software for safety-critical systems. And, the folks at Green Hills have always been really focused on safety and security in their software. And Green Hills software is used in a lot of automotive applications as the operating system for safety critical stuff. They put out a video showing a Model 3, it was a Model 3, doing a what should have been an automatic emergency braking demo along with another car. And running towards a child-sized mannequin and not stopping and running right over the mannequin. Similarly, since last fall, Luminar, the LiDAR company, has been doing a similar demo showing off what they can do with their LiDAR when used in a driver assistance application like that. And they started doing these demos last September at IAA in Munich. And they did it at CES earlier this year, and they've done it in some other places. Having a Lexus RX with Luminar LiDAR on it and a Tesla, I think a Model X is what Luminar was using, going the same speed down the road towards a pair of child-sized mannequins. The Luminar vehicle always detects the mannequin, stops in time, and the Tesla always runs it over. And so some of the Tesla fanboy community this week gotten rather upset at that. And there was one guy on Twitter whose Twitter user handle is Whole Mars Blog. But it's actually a guy who had previously gotten permanently banned from Twitter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But for some reason, they've opted not to ban him again, even though he's back on Twitter. He put out a call on Twitter asking for volunteers. You know, said, I don't have any kids, but if you want to let your kids participate in this test, I will prove that the Tesla will stop before it hits the kids. And if not, and if it's not going to stop, I will intervene and stop the vehicle. It's like,
we're going to put your kid at risk. Your kid in here. Hey, can I borrow your child so I can maybe hit it with a car?
Yeah.
But I won't, but you know.
And, you know, some other Tesla fans have been setting up their own versions of this test, you know, creating their own, pedestrian mannequins. Child-sized pedestrian mannequins, and they also have been running into the same problem that Luminar and the Green Hills folks had, where the car is not detecting child-sized mannequins. And the problem, the reason why this is happening, is because Tesla doesn't use radar or LiDAR. They don't use an active sensor that can actually measure the distance. They're using, because they only use the cameras, they have to use inference in the software to estimate how far an object is away. And what they're doing is they classify what the object is, if it's a vehicle or if it's a pedestrian, and then based on basically looking at how many pixels it takes up, they estimate what is the size of this object, and then from that work back and figure out, okay, this is, so they're assuming that a pedestrian is some height, let's say 5'7" average, and based on how many pixels it takes up in the image, they're work back from that to figure out, okay, this is how far away it must be. And that's an extremely inaccurate approach. And I wrote a white paper last year on for my day job on doing accurate distance measurement for driver assistance and automated driving systems. And as an example, I used in there, if you're using that kind of approach, which is what vision-only systems use, I put rear pictures of a Ford Transit and a Ford Transit Connect. And, the system is generally not going to be able to distinguish between those two. It doesn't know which one it is or, any other vehicle, because it's not really designed to be that precise. But, those two vehicles are very different in size. And if you're using that approach to estimate how far away something is, it's going to think that Ford Transit Connect, because it's about 75% as tall as the full-size Transit, is going to be significantly farther away. And it's not going to brake in time. It's going to run into it. I'm all in favor of NHTSA, coming out and doing something, to stop Tesla from testing beta safety critical software. I don't think anybody should be testing beta versions of safety critical software with untrained customer drivers.
Especially ones who want to just run down children.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to stop. It's funny because they're like, oh, it works just as well. I mean, there's a whole thing in film called forced perspective. Mm-hmm. And they use it a lot when they don't want to do any, especially back in the day before they had, strong enough computers to make people bigger than they are and smaller than they are.
That's what they did in the Lord of the Rings movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they use forced perspective, and it's because the depth of field in a camera it's not stereoscopic. It's not like your eyes where you can figure out how far something close is. And you also have to use your brain and how life has always worked and how you figure out how things that are smaller. Doesn't mean that person, 100 yards away is a teeny tiny ant. They're just farther away. And mm-hmm. it's this sort of visual trick that they use in movies, because it's a camera and it's not your eyes and your brain working in conjunction to determine what something is and how far away it is.
And unfortunately, Tesla is using that same approach in reverse to try to estimate how far away something is. And it's a fundamentally wrong approach for a safety system.
Yeah.
It's really weird because they were... when they talked about their computer system a couple years ago, one of their investor days, they just kept saying redundancy, how important redundancy is. And yet, when it comes to their sensors, they're like, we got one. But you can't use the rallying cry of redundancy, which is incredibly important for any sort of system, whether it's just driver's assistance or, you know, full level threes, level four. You know, you're gonna have multiple things making sure everything is working correctly. You can't run around with that bander and then be like, except for that one thing that looks at the road. Yeah. Redundancy for everything, except for that thing, because we're cool. It's cool.
All right, enough complaining about Tesla. Let's answer some listener questions. We've got a bunch of them this week. So the first two that I want to address are related to plug-in hybrids, and they're not in the right order here on the list. So let's start off with the question from Michael H. It says, "Hi, Wheel Bearings Cast. Haven't heard much about PHEVs on the show. I'm contemplating about getting a brand new Mitsubishi Outlander PHEV, older style, but with a good price, or wait until they release the new style. Bigger battery, but more expensive. Thanks. Love the show." So we actually do talk a fair bit about plug-in hybrids. I mean, we've reviewed a lot of them. You know, just a few weeks ago, I had the Tucson, Hyundai Tucson plug-in hybrid. We've driven a bunch of other ones. And of course, Nicole, you and your husband own one. You've got, yep, a Wrangler 4xe. Mm-hmm. So what do you think, you know, should Richard or should Michael get the old Outlander PHEV, the plug-in hybrid, or wait until the new one arrives later this fall?
I mean, if you don't care about the latest and greatest situation, then I don't see why not. I don't think there's going to be some drastic leap forward in terms of what the battery offers. I don't know. Do you think so, Sam?
It will have significantly more range than the old one.
So it'll have, like, what's significantly more for a plug-in? It's not like they have hundreds of miles of range to begin with,
I think,
right?
It'll be in the mid-30s. And what miles?
And what is it right now?
I think the current one, I think, is about 20.
So that would be the difference. So if that difference, if going from like 20-ish, I know I can see Sam was looking this up as I'm talking, going from whatever it is now to that 30, if that much of a range difference makes a difference to you, like as a rule, then wait. But you are going to pay a good chunk more if you wait to get the brand new one. I don't know.
24 miles for the car.
So if it's 24 and it goes from this, so it's a chunk. So how much is it extra? I mean, if you're going to be getting around town and getting through most of what you do with that smaller range, then I wouldn't worry about it that much, you know. But if you want that extra range, I think I'd wait.
I think maybe wait, just because maybe, fingers crossed, prices will go down just significantly across the board.
I know.
If you don't need a car right now, if you don't absolutely positively need, don't buy a car right now. It's sort of like is now my new thing, because yeah. I think everyone's like, 18 months, a year. Hopefully, you know, by the middle of next year, you know, it'll be vehicles will come back down to earth, or at least a bit come back down. They'll start to lose some of their insane valuations. So. I am of the firm believer of just, unless you absolutely positively need a vehicle right now, wait. I don't care if you're getting a used one, the new one. There'll probably be used ones, in the middle of next year. There'll be a new one in the middle of next year, and hopefully both of them will be far less expensive than if you bought them, you know, right now or in the fall.
One other thing I would add to all that is, you know, the old Outlander plug-in is, the operative word there is old. That is an old generation of Outlander.
Yeah.
You know, it's about, and it first came out in that form, I think about 2009 or 10, somewhere around there. And it wasn't particularly state-of-the-art then. So what you might want to do, just, you know, for, you know, to see the base vehicle itself, regardless of, you know, whether it's the plug-in hybrid or not, is, you know, go to a Mitsubishi dealer, check out the new Outlander. You know, I mean, they're not selling the plug-in hybrid version yet until later this fall, but just check out the base gasoline Highlander or Outlander and compare that against that the older model Outlander plug-in and see how you like just the base vehicle, regardless of the powertrain, because the new one is way nicer than the old one. There's a lot that's better about it. And so I would definitely do that. And then, you know, kind of decide, okay, do I want to spend the extra for the plug-in hybrid version of this new Outlander, or am I satisfied with the old Outlander? And if you are satisfied with the old Outlander, if it's good enough to meet your needs, then go, you know, if you can hold off, you know, I mean, if you can get a good deal on that old Outlander right now, you might want to go for it. But, you know, otherwise you might want to wait if you can, depending on what your current transportation needs are. But it sounds like you don't desperately need one right now if you're even considering the new one. So, you know, at least go and you know, take a test drive in the gas Outlander and compare it to the old plug-in hybrid. All right. Sticking with PHEVs, UMass Car on Twitter asks, can all PHEV vehicles drive at highway speed without the engine on? I think among current ones, some of the earlier ones, like the original Toyota Prius plug-in, could not. It did not have enough electrical power to do that. But I think of the currently available plug-in hybrids, yeah, pretty much all of them can drive, you know, at 70, 75, 80 miles an hour just on electricity. Obviously, they're not going to get that full range, you know. So, like, if you're driving a RAV4 Prime, you're not going to get 40 miles of highway driving on a charge like you can in more urban, suburban driving. Because, you know, as your speed goes up, you get a lot more aerodynamic drag and everything, and, you know, a lot more load. So, you know, it's going to cut the range to probably somewhere in the high 20s if you're driving, you know, 70, 75. But, you know, that's still good. You know,
so the other thing, too, if you're accelerating really aggressively onto the highway in electric mode, sometimes they'll kick to the gas engine, or you're going to, like, boom, you have no EV range left because you've just blown through it because you're mashing the gas pedal. So, yeah, there's that, too.
So how far can your Wrangler go at highway speeds on electricity?
God, I don't know that I've tagged out specifically highway versus city driving, but it gets, gosh, I'm drawing a blank now, but it gets just when we've done the range, whatever the specified range is, we generally,
21, I think.
So we normally get a couple miles more than what they say, like almost all the time. If it's 21, we're getting a few miles because my husband drives it more than I do, honestly, and he really pays attention to that. He's always coming in slightly higher, and he does a mix of highway and city driving typically. So we always get a little bit more range than what it says. And that's, you know, partly driving around town, partly getting on the highway and him going to work sometimes. So always a little bit higher than what they've specified. Unless you're super, super aggressive and you're driving an EV. Yeah. Mode. Yeah. Then it's just like being super aggressive driving with a gas engine. You know, your fuel economy suffers.
All right. Rick Thwiat, I think hopefully that's how you pronounce it. If not, I'm sorry, Rick, asks, with the success of the Maverick, how soon will it be before other automakers develop a competitor? Well, I think we kind of addressed that one earlier. There's already a competitor, which launched at almost the same time, the Hyundai Santa Cruz. But I'm sure that within the next couple of years, we will see competitors from other manufacturers as well. We'll probably see something from GM. There's been rumors for a long time that Stellantis was going to do a small Ram pickup based on, you know, something from the Fiat lineup in Europe. But yeah, we'll probably see additional ones. But I mean, you do have the Santa Cruz now. Coach Cabrera asks, how will the new EV incentives affect the prices of new and used EVs? Is this a death sentence for luxury startups like Lucid and Rivian?
I don't think it's a death sentence for luxury, because people buying luxury cars, if you're buying a car that was that much to begin with,
that's
$7,500, you're like, eh, cool. Like, yeah. It's not like, oh, no, now we're not buying a vehicle. $7,500 is not making a difference.
If you can afford $100,000 to $150,000 vehicle,
right?
Probably not that concerned about it.
Yeah, it's not. Lucid and Rivian, their real concerns are supply chain issues. That's what's messing with those two companies. It's if you could have gotten the an EV incentive, cool, but if you didn't, the people who are buying those are rich.
And I wonder, though, how much it'll even impact. Like, I feel like it could impact people who are more average income folks, because that could make a difference. And suddenly, and I also almost feel bad for the OEMs because they priced all their vehicles, right? They figure all this out based on assuming that we're going to have this EV credit for likely X number of years or months or whatever, you know, because they've done all their sales forecasting and their budgeting and figured all out. And it's like, oh, guess what? We made a new law and now none of the vehicles that qualify when you figured all that out qualify just like that. Boom. So
we got this one guy to vote for it, and he changed a lot of stuff, and he messed a lot of things up.
So I'm like, oh, crud. So I don't know. So I think it could negatively impact some of the other OEMs, but honestly, I think for a lot of people, if you're really determined to go for an EV, I don't know how much that tax credit would genuinely sway you. I don't know how much it would impact. I'll be curious to see if like the numbers overall go to when that.
A lot of people still buy Teslas and they haven't had a tax credit in a bazillion years. And there's still state credits, you know, there's still state and local credits that people can get regardless of what the federal government is doing.
True.
Which is sort of weird. After last week, or was it last week or week? I don't know. When you're like, oh, it's not that complicated. And then I'm like, oh, God, it's so complicated.
I've spent more time in the last reading through that bill.
Because at first you're like, this is what you're getting. You're like, all right. And then they're like all the amendments. And then you go through the bill and you're like, oh, my God.
Exactly. Why see, I'm from the government. I'm here to help. No, don't help us. We're good.
You're from where is he from? West Virginia? I'm from West Virginia.
Coal country.
Coal country. Let's all play some Little Red Lynn and just forget everything happened.
Yeah. So, a couple of things that are happening. I think last week we did talk about what Fisker had announced just before we recorded, which was if you lock in your order, convert your reservation into a firm purchase order, that you would still be eligible. And afterwards, after the show, I had a chance to sit down and look through more of the bill, and I did find what's known as the transition rule. So up until the time that President Biden signs the bill into law. It's now been yesterday. The House of Representatives passed it. So probably sometime in the next week or so, it will get signed into law. But until that time, for any company, any automaker that still has eligibility for incentives, which is all of them except for Tesla and GM right now, if you have a reservation in, and Rivian, Lucid, others, I think Volkswagen also put out announcements in the last couple of days that you can, you can utilize this same transition rule. So if you go and you convert your reservation that you have to a firm purchase order, then up until the time the new law is enacted, that will still be eligible. So you will still be able to claim that $7,500 next year. On your taxes, and that also applies to Toyota. Even though they're not currently selling the bZ4X, you can get it on the RAV4 Prime or the Prius Prime. They're both eligible for the $7,500. So if you order one and you have a non-binding or a non-refundable deposit, you can still get your money. Your $7,500.
That's something.
If you're looking for a Hyundai Motor Group, you better do it now because they're not going to have their factory open for a little while.
Yeah, that factory is not going to be till 2025 probably, and as far as the prices on the EVs, it's probably not going to, at least in the near term, it's probably not going to have much of an impact one way or the other, because as we talked about in the near term, they've got upward price pressure because of the price of the raw materials, but longer term, because until they get to a point where they're where they've got domestic production of the materials and so on, so that they're eligible for the full credit. There's going to be price pressure. There's going to be pressure on them to keep the prices down. They're not going to raise the prices because they know most of these vehicles are not going to be eligible for credits. So they're going to have to, try to cap the prices, raise them as much as they can to cover their costs, but not raise them any more than that, just because people won't be able to afford them anyway. So,
So either you have to hurry up or wait.
Yes,
that's one way when it comes other. To but if you're buying an EV, buy it this week or wait. Like if you don't need a new car again, if you don't need a car, this is the worst time to buy a car.
Just hold.
Hold. Everyone hold on. I got 2 more years of my lease for the Kona. I'm like, okay, 2 years, hopefully things will sort of like shake themselves out.
Fingers crossed.
Another question we had related to the new tax credits is from Jim Manhart. His question is, if you're able to transfer the credit to the car dealer, will you be skirting the income limits under the new EV tax credit law? And this is something we don't know yet. There's a lot of details that are missing from the law that will require the IRS, the Treasury Department, to actually issue some specific rules about how all of this is going to work. This is one of those things, because you now have the option to either save the credit and claim it on your next year's tax return, or when you buy the vehicle, you could transfer the credit to the dealer, assuming the dealer still has to register first with the IRS to be able to do this. If the dealer decides to register with the IRS, then you can transfer the credit to the dealer. The dealer has to give you an immediate discount at the time of purchase, so you lower your monthly payment on the vehicle, which is good. Mm-hmm. And then the dealer gets the money back from the IRS. Because of the law also puts income limits on people buying EVs and getting credits. Like, it's $150,000 for an individual filer, $300,000 for a couple filing jointly. If you make $175,000 as an individual filer, you're not eligible for any of these tax credits.
Right.
And how is that going to work with the transfer? We don't know yet. Probably going to be something like, based on your previous year's income, to initially do the transfer, and then next year when you file your taxes, if your income was over the threshold, then you'll probably have to pay it back to the IRS. So it's probably going to be something like that. It's going to be something complicated.
No, it's so simple. Everything is clear cut and easy to understand.
If you're at no risk of exceeding that $150,000 or $300,000 limit, then it will actually probably be a lot easier to just sign the paper to transfer it. But if you're close, if you're near that threshold, you might want to consider, just doing it, not doing the transfer and doing it yourself, unless, you're going to put aside the money just in case you go over the threshold for the following year. Let's see. Richard Head asked, you guys talked about the power window switch on the ID4 last week. They aren't the first to be cheap. Reminds me of my Dodge SRT4. They saved a few bucks by making the rear windows manual. And I'm assuming that he's talking about the Neon SRT4, which did in fact have manual crank windows on the back doors, even with power windows on the front. I can't remember. It's been like 12, 13 years since I drove the Caliber SRT4, which was the last one that they did like that. I don't think that had manual crank rear windows, but the Neon definitely did.
God, I hated the Neon. We had a Neon, and it was just a piece of trash. It leaked. It was just a piece of trash. That car was just trash.
The first generation or the second gen Neon?
I think it was the first gen.
Okay. It was cute looking, though.
Yeah, it looked really cute, and so we actually got it from...
And it was cheap.
My sister-in-law, and it was inexpensive, and it was cute, but it was, there was a reason why it was inexpensive. It was still cute. I wish they had just done a better job at building it. If they had just done a better job at building it, it would have been, I know people love that car when they talk about it, but if they brought it back, like a little Neon EV, and they just sort of updated the design, I'd be like, yeah, that's
awesome. You'd be happy.
Yeah, but it's... Man, it actually the computer actually died while I was driving it.
Oh jeez!
I just driving, all of a sudden the car just shut off, and I was like, "What the heck?" Like
done.
Everything, and
that's
I'm like,
it. That's
"Oh
all
my!"
You
and
got.
I'm going downhill, and San Francisco. I'm like, "Okay," and then we just pull over, and we took it into the.
I was going downhill, so I just kept coasting.
Yeah, thank God I was going downhill, not uphill.
And then things really went downhill.
Yeah, I remember we took it in. The guy's like, "Yeah, the computer's dead. Yeah, we just got to go." And we're like, "Oh, forget it." Am I giving it to like the Cash for Kids or Cash for Cars or Kids for Cash or
Cars for
Kids? One of those programs where you can donate a car for a tax.
Yeah, I think we donated it and it was gone. Thank God.
All right. Chris Emery asks, I listened to Sam on the Tech Guy with Leo, and now I found wheel bearings, and I'll be listening here too. Thank you, Chris. We appreciate that. I've gone from a hybrid to a plug-in hybrid, and I'm now ready to jump into the EV pool. You had suggested looking at the Kona EV one day with Leo. That one does fit my budget. So I have the Kona EV and the Chevy Bolt EUV and Kia Niro EV on my list. My problem is either due to the supply chain or regional restrictions. The Hyundai sales manager told me they were simply not delivering Kona EV to Florida. I cannot find anything in stock, and no one will take future leases. Any ideas on how to get into an EV in South Florida?
That's a bummer.
Yeah. So this is one of the things. Hyundai and Kia, for the past several years, they've only been selling their plug-in vehicles in California and the other states that follow the California EV mandates, of which Florida is not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that you can't buy directly from a Hyundai dealer or a Kia dealer in Florida. But there are ways around this. One option would be to go to one of the EV mandate states, like, let's say, go to California, take a little trip to California, buy the car there, and then drive it back.
Make a little road trip.
Yeah. Do a little transcontinental road trip. Or, go to Colorado or, one of the other states where they're selling them. If you want the Kona or the Niro or any other Hyundai or Kia EV, that's kind of, especially if you want one new, that's kind of your only option. You can buy used ones in Florida and at other places. So you might want to take a look at what's available in the used market, although it's probably going to be pretty thin. But that's also an option. And then really the Bolt is the only one that right now of those vehicles that is available in all 50 states.
Yeah.
So a Chevy dealer should be able to sell you one in Florida.
Or move.
Yeah, well, that's not the worst option in the world. We are talking about Florida here.
South Florida, isn't it, pretty? I've never been to Florida, so I don't know.
Depends where you are.
You've never been to Florida? Ever?
I've never been to Florida. Every drive program that goes to Florida, I'm like, I can't make it.
Never been to Florida?
I live on the West Coast. Why do I need to go to Florida? I got
because
Hawaii.
They have better the oranges. Same. I don't know. Florida oranges are a thing, right? Do you like oranges, Robbie? Go to the source.
We have oranges in California.
But you're not known for them like Florida. Isn't Florida the orange?
Yeah, but
Florida's only got better marketing for their oranges.
Okay, yeah, Florida has really good orange marketing. Go to Florida.
It's like Idaho. It's like Idaho and potatoes.
Which I drove through Idaho just trying to find some place to eat, and I couldn't find any place. I was like, I couldn't find potatoes. Like I wanted
like
to be like a thing.
And cheese.
I wanted there to be a potato place.
We have more cheese in California. We have oranges.
Let me tell you the one real reason you want to go. Pay a visit.
We
to
have
South
Disneyland
Florida.
Here.
Why? It's not as good as Disney
that,
World.
None of that matters. There's what? One really good reason to go to South Florida.
That is?
Cuban food.
Oh
yeah, that's
great
true.
Great Cuban food
there you
in
go.
South Florida.
Bam.
Every time
don't
I have
go
Cuban
to Jacksonville,
here.
Don't go to
there
Orlando.
You go. There you go.
Go to South Beach, hang out on South Beach for a week or so, get an Airbnb. That's what my wife and I did a few years ago.
And just
get an
Airbnb
on South Beach. Great Cuban food.
He's all got right. you. Now you,
there
now
you, go.
You have
that's
a reason.
Yeah.
Very,
that's the only
reason.
Yeah, that's the only reason. Yeah.
Go visit Florida. Forget the oranges. Go get
and,
Cuban
and if you see Alex Roy driving around, give him a wave.
Oh yeah, say hi to Alex. Hang out with Alex Roy. Say hi to Alex Roy, and eat Cuban food. That sounds like a good time, actually. To be completely honest,
it's not the worst thing you could do. Spend your time on. All right, last one from Jim Pettendrig.
Pettendrig.
Sorry, Jim.
I would say Pettendrig the way that is.
Pettendrig.
Pettendrig.
Okay.
I'm going with Pettendrig. Sorry, Jim, if I messed it up.
Please, feel free to write back to us and, give us some pronunciation guidance. And actually, in the future, anybody that wants to, in addition to Twitter, there's a link on the wheelbearings.media site for contact. If you want to send a question that, takes a little bit longer than you can fit in a tweet, which is what Chris did, use the email link on the site. And then, you know, provide us some guidance on pronunciation, because, you know, we really do want to try to say people's names right.
We try, but sometimes they're not as intuitive as people think.
Yeah, they're frequently not obvious.
I can't say Sam's last name, so that should give you an indication. We need to have pronunciations. Yeah.
I'm all Sam, you know, Sam. Like, what's his last name?
That's Sam.
Sam the car guy.
Sam the car guy? Oh, yeah, I know him.
You know Sam.
All right. Anyway. Jim asked, on the 5th of August, you spoke of limiting vehicle speeds. I was stationed in Germany during the oil embargo, so this was in the 1970s, and the German government lowered the speeds on the Autobahn to 100 kilometers an hour, which for Americans is about 62 miles an hour.
Ugh.
A lot of the public said it was their right to go as fast as they wanted.
Well, yeah. When I was a kid and we were getting our license, what would they keep saying? It's not a right, it's a... The privilege.
It's a privilege.
Yeah.
It's not a right. It's a privilege. I think that's. I think that's the whole argument right there. Driving is not a right. It's a privilege.
It is, but I do think that 62 is too slow, on a highway.
Yeah.
Well, it's also during the oil embargo. So.
Whatever. 62 is still too slow on a highway.
Also, 62 in a car in the 70s was pretty quick.
That's true. Not 60. Yeah, exactly. Wait a minute.
The top speeds were probably about 75.
So it wasn't as much of a drastic decrease as we're thinking, because it's 2022. Yeah.
I grew up in Ontario, Canada, where the speed limit was, in fact, 100 kilometers an hour, you know, 62 miles an hour. But nobody drove 62 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's
if you were going 62, you were getting passed by pretty much everybody. You know, the average speed on the highways was typically between 120 and 130 kilometers an hour, so about 75 to 80 miles an hour, which is about what it is here in Michigan most of the time.
Yeah, that's what it is here in California. Yeah. It's 65, but everyone's doing at least 70, 70. Well, here's the weird thing about my house. They're either doing the regular speed limit, 70, 75, or they're doing like 100, or they're doing 45. Yeah. I don't know what's going on, and it's only this weird stretch of road near where I live where people are driving just – everything just 10 tenths and then flipping their cars and bursting into flames, or they're driving like they haven't found fourth gear. They're like, yeah, third gear's good, this is good. 45 miles an hour on the freeway where everyone's doing 65 seems completely safe, which isn't. It's not. Put your hazards on. If you're going to drive that slow, please put your hazards on, because that's not — there's a thing called anticipation, and people do not anticipate you be driving crazy slow.
Well, especially on highways, the thing that is most likely to cause crashes is not necessarily — I mean, high speeds will, you know, if you're driving faster than you are capable of controlling the vehicle and it is safe for that vehicle, that does cause crashes. The other thing that causes crashes is significant differences in speed. So, you know, especially, you know, if people are not paying attention, if they're not paying enough attention, if everybody's driving the same speed, things tend to go fairly smoothly. But when you have vast differences in speed, that's when problems start to happen. Unless there's a mechanical problem that prevents you from kind of going with the flow of traffic, you know, you should try to stick fairly close to the flow of traffic. By the same thing, you don't want to be going significantly faster than the flow of traffic. If the flow of traffic is going 70, 75 miles an hour, try to drive that speed, you know, because you want to minimize the need for overtaking and changing lanes. You know, if everybody's just going along at that speed, if you go that speed, it's going to be safer. But if you've got somebody bombing along at 100, 120, 140 miles an hour when everybody else is going 70, that's when trouble happens.
Yeah. A lot of people don't understand, especially people in their 20s and 30s, don't realize how much the vehicle is keeping you from dying. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're in your 40s or older, there have been times where your car has just lost it at like 20, 30 miles an hour, because we didn't have all, you know, anti-lock brakes. We didn't have traction control. We didn't.
Yep.
Now barely had seat belts when I was a kid.
Yeah. We barely had seat. Apparently we didn't have seat belts in my family. but if you're, you know, right now the cars are so much smarter and are so much safer. But the issue is that when you lose it, when it does break free, you're breaking free at an incredible amount of speed. If you're breaking free at 80 miles an hour, whereas like when we were kids and we broke free at like 25, you're like, oh gosh, and you kind of like
the consequences kind of are not as great as you have far less kinetic energy to dissipate when you come to a stop. Because it's not actually the speed that kills you. It's the sudden change in speed when you hit something.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it's that sudden deceleration.
Kablam.
Yeah, so I see vehicles, like people are just flying around these back and forth, you know, flying through traffic. And you can see the car, like, doing its best to keep this person safe. And then at least once a week, there's, you know, some kids, they were in a, you know, an SUV. Typically, it's an SUV because that's the family car, and they took it out from their parents, and it broke free. Once it broke free, that was it.
It's done.
And then everyone's in trouble. There's a fire. There's this. There's that. Yeah, it's kind of terrifying. They're like, yeah, I'm a great driver. Like, yeah, you're a great passenger right now. the car's really doing a lot.
The car's doing all the work.
And this is actually one of the dangers, you know, with having so many vehicles now that have four-wheel drive or all-wheel drive, especially in poor weather conditions. You know, yes, the extra traction will help you to keep going. But if you drive, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean you should be driving at higher speeds. If you're in a snowstorm, you should not be going down the highway at 70 miles an hour, even if you have four-wheel drive, because, you know, if you lose traction, and you will lose traction at that speed, mm-hmm. and you go off, that just means you're going to go further off the road into the woods or wherever. You know, you're going to get in trouble at higher speeds, but you're still going to get in trouble. So you should still be slowing down, you know, in poor weather conditions and, you know, taking all that into account in your driving and be responsible.
All-wheel drive is not the magic bullet that people assume it is.
No, it does everything and it doesn't. It doesn't save you. Don't be stupid.
I have this argument with people all the time, and they do not believe me. I'm like, a two-wheel drive, front-wheel drive, or rear-wheel drive vehicle with really good winter tires will do way better than your all-wheel drive vehicle with all seasons. And they're like, no, I'm like, I know the marketing people have done such a great job telling you how great all-wheel drive is, and I love an all-wheel drive vehicle, especially for acceleration and pulling out of corners, but... That's not how it works.
Winter tires. I can't say enough good things about winter tires. Like, seriously, if you're someplace where you have weather that goes below like 40, 45 degrees for most of the winter, you should put winter tires on your car. And Blizzaks are my favoritest. I have them on my car. I love them. I show them my hard-earned cash for them. Yeah, the name. I mean, like, what are you driving on? I'm driving a Blizzaks.
When my wife and I first got married almost 30 years ago, she was driving a Mercury Sable with all season tires. And I had a 5-liter Mustang, and in the wintertime I put winter tires on it. Mm-hmm. And that thing didn't have ABS or traction control or any of that stuff. And it was way more stable in the snow than that front wheel drive Sable ever was. I personally have, you know, in the course of my engineering career, spent a lot of time driving on snow and ice, you know, developing stability control and traction control systems. And, you know, I've driven on a lot of different kinds of tires, from, you know, high performance summer tires to studded winter tires and everything in between. And winter tires are absolutely the thing. I 120% agree with you, Nicole. You know, if you live somewhere where it snows or where it gets cold, winter tires are way better than any all season tires.
And I know people think that, like, oh, but it's such an extra expense. Well, it's not really, because you're not driving your all seasons or whatever else you have on. So they're being shelved for a few months out of the year. It's just,
and they're going to last longer.
They're going to last longer because for part of the year now you're putting the winter tires on the car, and they're doing the mileage that your all seasons would otherwise be getting. They've done some drive programs where they've had us test like a company's all season tire and a company's winter tire on ice to show the difference that it makes. Like, it's their own tires. And like, this is the difference. And the difference is dramatic. It is dramatic. Same vehicle, same conditions, same everything. Your all season will be okay, but then you get into the winter and you're like, oh, I stopped way the heck sooner than I did with the all season.
Oh,
I had way better control. I didn't fishtail as much. Like, it's a dramatic difference. If you live where you get winter and you can afford to get another set of tires, get yourself a pair of winter tires.
Yeah, my daughter got a set of winter tires, an extra set of wheels for her Toyota 86 last year. And going through the past winter on those, she was shocked at how much better it was than driving all seasons.
Yep. They're the bestest. Okay. There's our there's our PSA on going and getting winter tires.
Get winter tires. Speeding is not a right. It's a privilege. There you go.
Not quite sure that last part came up right. But
speeding is not a right. It's a privilege. Wait, no. Shouldn't be speeding. But you,
shouldn't
you're
be
going.
Speeding
we all.
Ever, Robbie.
You should be never safe be out speeding. There, please. Yes. Be responsible. Safe. Don't don't be an idiot behind the wheel.
Yes.
Take a driving course. Those are fun.
Trust me. You are not Lewis Hamilton.
You think you are.
Don't act like it.
Yes.
So, you know, it's funny. So when you do
wrote that article on Friday. I literally said, you are not Lewis Hamilton.
Have you ever been
in
one
of these
stores?
Is that article up? I don't even know.
There's like, there'll be like a track drive and they'll let you do laps and you do laps and laps and laps and laps. And after you've done a bunch of laps, you're like, I'm so good at this track. I got this. I am brilliant at this track. I have it down. And then they have you do a hot lap with the race car drivers there.
And you realize,
I am S-H-I-T. I cannot drive.
You think
you're good until you're with someone who is good. And you're like, I'm not good.
Yeah. If you ever want to. Yeah, you know, I know I've seen lots of surveys over the years where drivers, you know, surveys of drivers where, you know, 85% of them think they're above average. Obviously that math does not quite pencil up.
The math
but if you ever want to prove to yourself that you are not above average, go somewhere, go to a racetrack or somewhere, you know, where you can ride shotgun with a professional race car driver.
Lord, they will prove just how much you have to learn.
Yes.
I thought I was, I think I'm a safe driver, but I thought I was a good driver until I became an automotive journalist.
Right.
And I would be in like in a sports car, like in, you know, drive programs where we're driving lots of cars up and down the hill, the World Car of the Year thing especially. I'd be in a sports car and I would have somebody behind, like the first few years, someone behind me in like an SUV just riding my ass being like, why are you going so slow?
Right. Yeah. You're like, I'm going really fast. Wait, why are there four cars behind me right up on my butt?
Yeah. I've gotten much better, but I'm definitely not the best driver or the fastest driver as an automotive reporter. I think maybe I'm probably in the middle somewhere. Like, I've done trips with, like, let's say Tim Stevens, former EIC of Roadshow. He's an amazing driver. And they're like, hey, it's just going to be you and Tim on this trip. And I'm like, oh, so it's going to be this really great guy. And then me. No, you're
Tim races his Subaru on frozen lakes in upstate New York in the wintertime. So
Tim
he knows car control.
He does.
Yeah, Tim knows car control way better than the majority of the humans on the planet. And so it's So you think you're a great driver, and this is it happens a lot when I'm driving around and I'll end up like catching up to like a car club and they all have Porsches and I'm driving like a Civic, and I'm like I'm just on their tail. I'm like, guys, I know you love your Porsches, but I drive, like my entire job is driving cars. So please pull over.
Move.
Please move. Don't feel bad because somebody is going to pass you because they're a better driver than you. Just don't. It's fine.
Yeah, never let that pressure you into driving faster in
any
situation.
Never drive faster,
Let the guy on the highway that's on your butt, you know what, if he really needs to, just get out of the way and let him go and let him wrap himself around a tree if he's an idiot. Don't
do
that yourself.
Your whole life is going to feel so much. You're going to reduce so much stress in your life if you just like
all
sort of
the
like
stress will go away. You'll just be you'll be centered. You'll find yourself. Just don't need to be the fastest person on the road. You don't.
Yes.
You don't.
Just relax. Be smooth. Pay attention. You know, don't wait till the last second to get on the brakes or to turn the wheel. You know, do everything gradually.
Smooth and gradual. That's the trick.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Drive like Jackie Stewart.
Yeah.
All right. With that, let's call it a show, and we will talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.